Consulting firm founded in 2003. Brighton Consulting provides life insurance consulting services to insurance agents, accountants, attorneys, and financial advisors. Tom and his team work in a collaborative effort to help clients design, implement, and fund sophisticated life insurance programs. Tom has an MBA as a certified financial planner and a member of the International Forum. He's been asked to speak at numerous industry meetings and has 23 years of experience. Brighton Consulting is based in Salt Lake City, Utah, and Tom works at the Western United States. He's married with two children and is an avid golfer and skier. So,
thank you.
I like to ski, so we have one thing in common.
Thank you.
So with that, let's give a round of applause to Tom.
Thank you. What I will do is I'll help you with a couple of ideas that will help you the way you position insurance, show it to advisors or clients that will make you some money. So we'll hope this will be meaningful. Real quickly, and this will be a repeat of, I did this 2 hours ago. How many in here have read the book, The Black Swan? I just started reading it. I was in a conference in Chicago, and one of the speakers recommended that I read it. So I immediately downloaded it on my Kindle, started reading it. It starts off with the premise that Black Swan is a metaphor. Prior to the discovery of Australia, all swans were white. Did you know that? Except for in Australia, they found out there were black ones. The point being that our frame of reference and our knowledge is all based on what we know in history. But we only learn from what we don't know. So the black swan is a metaphor that goes throughout the book talking about the things and how we learn, and it's a lot of positioning. So what I want to talk about is, you know, the black swan, which is the big case. It's the biggest case you've ever written. Just for my information, I just want to talk to you guys. Brian's been around for a while. What is a big case? I mean, is it something you base on the face amount? I mean, $100 million on a 30-year-old, I'd rather write $5 million on a 75-year-old. What is a big case? Is it the premium? You know, is it $100,000, $500,000, a million? So what's the biggest case anybody's ever heard written in Utah? Draw it out. $100 million face amount, okay? Did you do it? Good. No. Were you help? Did you help at all?
$1 million in premium.
Well, when Brian Wire at New York Life back in the 90s, somebody wrote $100 or $120 million face amount, and the premium was $1.2 million. And back then you're just going, wow. I mean, still, $1.2 million, wouldn't you be pretty excited about that? That's a big case. $1.5 million, okay. Recently?
Ten years ago in California.
10 years ago. Somebody at the last meeting said that there was one written this year for $3 million, okay. My point is we all have a black swan. To me, it's what's the biggest case. I'll tell you a little history about my biggest case. And Brian Washburn invited me to speak. And again, we only get lucky because we're the ones that went to Australia and found the black swan. We were working my partners and I were working on a planning engagement with a firm down here in Utah County. It was about a $96,000 planning fee. Worked our tails off, made nothing on it because we did so much work for them. But when it was all done, we ended up writing a $17 million life insurance policy. And at the time, this is probably 02, we financed it. We borrowed $1 million a year for 5 years. It was an ING. It was designed to be sort of an arbitrage. We were borrowing money at 1.2% interest, believe it or not. The policies were crediting back then, what, about 6.5? The design was to buy the insurance, use the low cost of the interest, and let it arbitrage, and you'd have $10 gazillion and never have to pay anything. Well, it didn't work. And the end of the story. But let's go back to the beginning. So we work on this case. We go through all this planning. We make no money. We get the insurance that was $456,000 of target premium. Now, that was a black swan. That was a lot of money in 2000. It's a lot of money now, right? We'd like to be doing those all day long. $456,000. So we started thinking, what we're doing and how we approach the business and, where we want to be in the space. And we get this call from an accounting firm. And they wanted us to try to help a client of theirs that had a vision. They were a real estate developer, and they were in a This is 0203. They were in a economic environment where they're trying to continually chase their tail. They would buy projects, do their thing, sell it, then go buy the land again, and it was double. You know, so you know how it was going back then. So what they thought was, what if we bought life insurance on this partner of ours, the landowner, the farmer, the rancher, the guy that, you know, that has this chunk of land that's now valuable. What if we insured his life to enhance the value of the transaction, to protect, right, for mortality risks and all the things? So the project we're working on was a $100 million project. It was four parcels of land. One parcel had 19 old partners in it, and we decided we were going to try to build this insurance transaction. And they said, oh, one more thing. We're real estate guys. We don't use our money. We want you to help us finance it. We're like, okay. We've done one. We're experts at it now. Maybe we've done two. I don't know. But so, you know, they didn't know. I mean, we were their black swan. Long story short, after a year, meeting with the chief actuaries with a major insurance company, we wrote a case that was $2.7 million a year of premium for 10 years, a 10-year 10-pay, $1.8 million a target. Sent us down a path of saying, you know what, why don't we just try to figure out how to be smart insurance guys and quit saying we're financial advisors, financial planners, because people will still buy it and write some big premium checks. So what I want to do for you guys today is tell you my perceptions, my experience, my feelings. If you disagree, argue with me. I mean, this is what I think. So let's go through a couple things. All right. The first thing I want to talk about is wealthy people and their perception of money and the reason why they're reluctant to write the check. Because as soon as you ask for the premium dollar, regardless of the size, this is the math they go through. They take $15 of revenue from their company, assuming they have a 10% profit margin. It makes them $1.50. They pay taxes. They got a dollar, right? So I backed into it algebraically. It takes $15 of revenue from your client's company to come up with that $1 that he has to give to you, that when he dies, somebody else might make 6% on it at his death. Not him. And an okay deal. Even if it's structured in an islet, it's outside of the state, right? It's an okay deal, okay? It's not the dollar. It's the $15 of revenue. They do the math in their head so quick, you can't pause. So what are you doing? It's $100,000 of premium or $200, let alone gift taxes, using how do you get the money into those entities to be able to do it, okay? That's what you're up against. All right. Experience has also told me that, guess what? Sometimes rich old guys don't really give a crap about the younger kids. They don't. I mean, think of an example. You've all seen it. Dad works 20 hours a day for 30 years, builds the company up, turns it over to the kids. They do a pretty good job. 5 years later, they sell it. The kids all make $5-8 million. Now they're all real estate developers. Now broke, of course, but. The point is dad, sometimes dad feels like he's done enough for his kids, and he's resentful. I had a client sit in a meeting and say, I don't care. I'm not buying the insurance. You've got enough. We pay taxes, you'll still have money. He said that in a meeting. I'm going, wow. I mean, their perception is reality, as we all know, right? They're always right. But we always say, oh, we love her. And he loved his kids. This is the kids coming and kiss dad on the cheek before the meeting. This is a family that loved each other, but his kids were rich, and I think it made him mad. Moms care more than dads, don't they? Moms care more than dads. Moms want everything to be equal. Dads are like, I don't know about equal, but we'll be fair. Moms are, oh, no, it's got to be equal. Which leads us to the 1 in 4 rule, and this is something I've made up. But in Utah, it might be 1 in 6, but 1 in 4 is the number I use. If you've got 4 kids, you've got one of them that is a drug addict with 12 kids from 9 different fathers, right? You got that one kid. And unfortunately, the entire planning process is seized because they have to do everything around the lowest common denominator, which is the bad kid. It happens. The bad kid. Anyway, the other 1 in 4 is it's the really good kid. How many times have you seen a situation where the oldest sibling, I've had a situation where it's a son-in-law, but it's one of the siblings that takes over the business, quadruples it, I mean, just rockets this business. Well, guess what? I mean, we work with farm and ranch folks, and guess what? That kid, he's getting the farm. He's not going to give it to the other kids. That's how farmers are. This kid, he's the one who worked 12, 15 hours a day. He was here, did the deal. He's getting the farm. Mom's like, oh, no, you got to be fair. We got to divvy this up. No way. So the 1-in-4 rule works both ways. It's a dynamic you have to understand, because you're not going to sell the insurance. You're not going to get the plan done until you figure out what the loser's doing and what the really successful one's doing, because it muddies up the plan for the entire family. Again, things I've just learned. I mean, you have to understand some of these dynamics. Which comes first, the strategy or the insurance? I don't know. You know, we drive the strategy because we sell insurance. The advisors don't nearly drive it. They just react and draft documents to support what we do. But if you don't bring them in, if you surprise them, there you go, you're off for a year. You're right. Again, these are big cases, right? They're not going to do anything with their CPA and attorney. The guys want to help you. Bring them in. And if you're going to sell a $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 case, you've got to have those advisors from the very beginning, whoever is involved in making the decision. You've got to have them around. You can't surprise them. It can't take a year, and you might have to have a backup plan, because guess what? They may not be insurable. The business situation might change. The dynamics are all over the place. But be real careful with the strategy versus the insurance. Get everybody involved. Okay. I think we all know this, and it's somewhat assumed, but our clients, we baffle them with our intelligence sometimes, and once we've got them confused, they just tell us no, because they have no idea what we're talking about. We build a strategy or design or something that's so sophisticated, because we always bring them the best thing we've got, right? There's no sense in holding back. You bring the best thing you've got, they have no idea what you've done, so they just put you on hold, or they tell you no. They usually just put you on hold, which is worse. Just tell me no. I'd rather have that. Oops. Okay. This is really important, and it's something that it evolved. It's a concept that evolved about 5-6 years ago that became very meaningful to me. So much of what we do has to be need-based, and it has to be very sophisticated in its calculations. And I mean things like estate taxation. I'm in the wealth transfer business, per se. That's really what I like to do. I like working with rich, old, 80-year-old Jewish guys. That's my favorite. Okay, they can be in Florida, California, it doesn't really matter. Rich, old Jewish guys. Those are my favorites. People with money tend to think of it's a big pot because it's all their money. And it's like a scoreboard, right? The bigger the number, the bigger the score, the better it is, right? It's all one chunk of money. Problem is, it's not all one chunk of money. Now, this is a concept developed by Julian Movazian and Scott McVicker from Newport Beach. It's called Succession Capital. And their firm's called Succession Capital Alliance. I'm affiliated with them. I think it's brilliant. But it helps your clients sort of take the emotion out of their money. You really have to become, objective and say, listen, at the end of the day, of this big pie that's your wealth, your world, how much of it really is your money? In other words, the amount you're going to consume. If this guy's making $1 million a year, he's living on 300, isn't he? Right? They don't get rich because they live on 2 million when they've got 1 million of income. They don't spend what they make. So there's some slice of his pie. As a metaphor, some slice of his pie, their pie, that they could live on, spoil the grandkids, travel, buy, do everything they want. Okay? That's what we call lifestyle capital. And until we can get our clients over the this mental block of differentiating their money, they're going to be less likely to act. And then if we understand it this way, we don't have to worry about, is Obama going to change the tax or not? And at what rate? And what's the exemption going to be? Let's find out what Obama's going to do. Who cares what Obama's going to do? $14 trillion in debt. There's going to be taxes. But we want to know the number because we want to calculate it, really, to buy the minimum amount of insurance. This takes that away. Say, listen, okay, whatever's left over that you're not going to consume is succession capital. So you're not here to say, what I do makes my kids rich. It's theirs already. You're in two roles of your money. You're the CEO and you're the shareholder, okay? If you're Jeffrey Immelt, you're running GE, Sunday night, you got all your shares and your options in your mind, you know exactly what you're worth, right? Monday morning, you go to work and you're trying to drive the value of all the shares of GE for all the shareholders. Well, our clients are in both roles, but they think they're only in one. They'd make all their decisions as the shareholder, not the CEO, right? Because if they did all the right things, they'd do all the things their advisor tell them to do. But they think it's all one pot of money. They might run out. Things might happen. right? All those contingencies. If you can get them to understand that it's two types of capital, you're going to get guys to start thinking differently about how they approach their estate and their succession. All right. I mean, this is obvious. If they're going to give us a dollar of premium, you know, what are they going to get in return? How do you guys differentiate that? How do you differentiate yourselves? How do you convey that in a way that they're willing to do it? Okay? Think about compounding. Is it going to help their heirs with their own money? Maybe, maybe not. Let's take a look at an example. Now, this is something we show. This is a real-life way of showing clients of something that they do by default. Okay, rich guys with passive income, what do? With the income? Save it. They reinvest it, right? I don't need it. This is a $1 million portfolio, right? Start out with $1 million, grow it at 5%, $50,000 of the earnings, 40% tax, I have 20,000 tax, that's what I net next year's beginning balance. But my client dies that year in a 45% estate tax bracket, that's what the kids get. That's the real rate of return. Now, our clients think they're doing a good job with their $1 million. 5% compound, not living on it. 5%, rule of 72, 14 years, it's going to double, be 2 million. Really? In this example, at life expectancy, 85. $882,000. He doesn't even have his $1 million back to his heirs in succession capital because it's their money because he's not going to spend it, right? Here's another example. Put $1 million into a $2.5 million life insurance policy. And yeah, I know, how do you get in the trust? We've got gifting issues, right? Forget all that. Let's assume we could. Look at the pure math. That's not a home run, but look at the difference. Mr. Client, this is succession capital. You're the CEO of that capital. If your CFO came to you and said, we've got an investment here that over the next 16 years is pretty likely to yield us a negative 1%. Or we've got an option over here that might get us, you know, a really nice bond rate of 5 or 6%. Which one do you want us to do? But he does this by default all day long, not knowing the consequences to the people that are going to get the money anyway. Any questions on that? Did you get that? I mean, that's a lot of stuff. Have you ever gone through this analysis with your client to explain them how their money is going to move in the hands of the people that are going to get it anyway? I'm talking about people probably worth $5-10 million or more, at least. They're going to have an estate tax problem. You don't get to be worth 10. I think 10's kind of the number. If a guy's worth 5, they could go broke again. Am I wrong? $3-4 million, oh, I could lose it all. They do. 5 million, they still think they could go broke. They're not as likely. A guy worth 10, he'd do this all day long. All right. This is something I kind of came up with. I spent a lot of time with other advisors, a lot of CPAs and attorneys, along with professional advisors like yourselves. And they don't understand. Let me go back to this. They don't understand how insurance works. They really don't. In the early years of any contract, if you die, it's winning the lottery, right? You buy a term policy, or you know, let's say you do the $1 million deal, you die the next day. That's still the lottery, isn't it? You made, you know, 2.5 times in a day. You'd wish you'd only pay quarterly, but you know. It is like winning the lottery, okay? But we also know that right around life expectancy, it's more like a bond, okay? At some point in time, we're going to either break even or go further out. So I built this chart. Craig and I built this. And I said, you know, in my head, I'm kind of sketching this out, going, listen, we've got to show people how insurance works. In the early years, we know that the rates of return are way up there, right? We call this the risk phase because it truly is risk. We're willing to transfer dollars to the insurance company for a substantial amount of risk, and they're willing to take it on because of the laws of large numbers. If it was just you and them, they wouldn't do it. But they got lots of people. They don't figure you're all going to die the same day. Okay? The third phase is the refund phase or the break-even. Now, this blue line is a single pay. When does that break even? When you're 147? I don't think it ever could. It couldn't. Now, the green phase in the middle is the return phase. And that's what Craig and I like to focus on. Our designs are specific around 10 years, give or take, of life expectancy, the time when you're likely to die. It's all about probabilities, right? So what we want to teach our clients is, listen, are you willing to take a 5.5% rate of return for the fact that you could live to be 147, even though Jerry Borrowman's grandma lived to be 103. She didn't live to be 147. We're still really good down in here on some of these other designs. Okay, I don't need that. Okay, so the red line gets to be a little more yield. If I'm okay, now I'm not saying you lose money. You get all your money back then. It's just that your yield's zero. Okay? Are you okay at 103? Well, we can get you 7, 7.5 if you're okay at 103. What about this design? 19 out of 20 people are dead before 100 for this client. 19 out of 20 are dead. Look at that error. That's 12. This is the same policy designed four ways. If I'm working with your client and your advisors, who's going to win the deal? Somebody's going to bring them one of these deals. And we'll maybe show them something like that. All it is we couldn't get anybody to understand how insurance worked. I had a CPA here in Utah County, a good one, told me that at life expectancy, at life expectancy right along here, he thought life insurance was a break even. X major firm, you'd all probably know the name, said there's probably a break even life expectancy. I said, well, it's probably a really good bond. Maybe better if we design it right. Is it any wonder they're telling our clients, don't do it? They don't understand. They've never seen insurance this way. It's like, listen, I don't care. That's the same policy. And guess what? The one that helps you the least probably pays me the most. All right. I'm going to give you some ideas. We'll give you a couple of case studies. We'll get out of here, unless you have questions. All right. Other people's money. Let's talk about leverage. People that are successful understand how to use leverage. They bought buildings, right? They bought businesses. They've used other people's money. They borrowed it to do it. It's because you want something. You just don't have the cash for it. So you're going to use some of your money, some of their money, and you're going to acquire something you would own anyway. If you use leverage, you got to have an exit strategy because things change, and they do. And trust me, we learn a lot. You learn from the black swan, right? We think it's all white swans, and then here comes the black one. Keep it simple. And remember, boil it down to a business decision. Okay, this is a real life case. It just renewed. Anybody in this office from Mass Mutual? We did this with some Mass guys. It's in its third year now. So we're right here. That's our interest rate for the third year. We just paid that in interest. We owe that much in collateral. What we did in this example, the gal was 81. Quite a bit of real estate, fair amount of assets, and she needed $15 million of insurance. And the typical premium for that, what's $15 million an 80-year-old? $600,000, give or take? Something like that, $500,000, $600,000. So what we said, listen, why don't we go down to a bank? Let's go get a big international bank, and they'll lend us that money. And we're gonna pledge two things. We're going to pledge the cash and the policy from a little company called John Hancock. They're pretty good, I heard. And in addition to that, we're going to pledge some outside collateral. And the way the collateral works is they take the surrender value at the end of the year, and they take the interest due at the end of the year, and then they take the loan they give you at the beginning of the year, and it's the difference. That's how they come up with it. That's how this design was. It was interest in arrears. So we've only paid, that's all we paid on this $15 million. What's that? These are each year, out of pocket each year. Did anybody notice that internal rate of return? Anybody see that? Now, let me go to the next stage, because you're going to say, well, what about the interest rate? So we stress test it. We said, okay, let's move it up to 7. We can run it at 9. The only difference is the break-even, if we go back, the break-even here is at 98, and the other one, the break-even's at 100. Now, if she's around at 100, we don't have to wait till she's 100 to change this, but, you know, it still works. So anybody see any problem with this? Any stressing in there? Anybody look at that collateral column? Now, collateral is just a contingency. They're not taking their money. They're saying, listen, if you go nuts, right, move out of the country and decide to be an Indian hippie or something at age 92, we just want to make sure we get our money back. So it's a contingency. So at death, that's released, right? The client gets that back. Now, this particular design has a declining death benefit because the carrier capped us out on the life insurance right here because of her age. So the insurance capped out, but what happened is the loan balance is growing. So that's why the IRA just, that's why it tapers off so quick. Again, all the advisors in the room, every year, here's what we're doing, what do you think, right? We know what we're doing, right? And by the way, this one has the 1 in 4 kids, it's an idiot. It's the son, he's a moron. He wouldn't sign documents to be a beneficiary of this trust because he's just under protest. He wouldn't sign it. So he has disinherited himself or whatever this business becomes. He's an idiot. Okay, let's talk about some, I've got 4 case studies I want to go through if you're interested. Yeah. And I'll give you some examples. If you any questions while we're teeing this up? You can't have any you want. If you got real life stuff and you want like a sample deal, call us. We'll give you one that really works. You know, something that's in the range that you're looking for. And again, all right, this is the one I like. This is Mr. Investor. This guy's worth $100 million managing his own money. Not some hedge fund, it's just his dough. Okay, $40 million is in his retirement plan. Okay. He wants to leave $30 million to his kids. So this is a $10 million example. Let me show you what we did here. This would be a traditional design, right? Most guys say, listen, let's go out and find some sort of a reasonably priced, this is the lowest priced guaranteed ULO premiums to 100 that you can get. It's a joint life, here's the IRR, pretty good. Even at 90, pretty decent, right? Because again, we want to look in our return bracket to see how it looks. We said, listen, why don't we do this? You're never gonna give ABC Insurance Company your money. Why? Because you're a smart investor, right? Right, okay, how about we do this? Why don't you give us $200,000 since you're 65 and you could get sick? Give us $200,000 and let's do this. Instead of the $102,000, you take that money, you go put it in your portfolio. You go grow it. Now, we know that it's gonna start escalating. This happens to be one design we really like because they let us actually climb into the policy really slow. Crawl into, I guess, is the better term for it. We originally ran the side account at 6% because that's the number we like, 6 or 4. He goes, I make 15% of my money. Well, we said, okay, well, at 15% interest, there's $13 million you never gave the insurance company. Now, if you guys would have come and done this design over here and we'd happened to walk in the door 2 weeks later while it's still in the free look period, we might have said, well, you could do this or you could do this and have, you know, $23 million instead of $10 million. Right? Same deal. It's positioning. It's getting what they want. It's appealing to the fact that this guy's brilliant with his own money. Great. But even at that, if you'd done this and you died here, when does it become a bad deal? All right. We're under 15. Geez. At 103, it's still 4%. When's that a bad deal? It's not. But again, he's thinking he makes 15. This is kind of complicated. Okay. It's got too many columns. Let's do another one. Yeah, this is a good one. This is a client in San Diego, and smart guy. And we said, you know, why don't we look at this from a couple of standpoints? Well, what we decided is go borrow some money and go buy an Index Universal Life. Anybody like Index Universal Life? Not that we like them or hate them, but yeah. Okay, so we said, listen, why don't we do this? And it's a pretty simple discussion. Listen, if you can go borrow money at 4, which right now is actually under 3, and you could go earn 4.5 or 5 or 7 or some number better than that, how much would you borrow? What do they say? Much as I can, right? If I can borrow at 4 and get 5, how much would you borrow? Post some collateral because the loan balance is greater than the surrender value. It was like term insurance or something. He wanted to pay a set amount for the 20 years. In the 20th year, we're going to surrender that out of the policy and crawl out of the loan. The design was basically pretty simple. Look at the IRRs at death. This guy lives to be 100, it's 9%. Now, again, we're basing it on a 7.5% return in the index. If it makes 6, it doesn't work as well. If that goes up. But the beauty is after here, I have no collateral risk. If I'm in this thing 10 years and I hate it, I mean, what's my risk here? What I've paid plus $135,000, I just walk away from it, right? It's a transaction, it has its own escape hatch. It's a great supplemental retirement idea. A lot of guys are doing this. What else? We have one more?
Yeah.
This one I really like. We were working with this farmer up in Idaho. Smart guy. These farmers are smart guys. This guy worth $25 million. He's a character too. And so we talked about financing and the collateral and all that crap. You can just see his eyes glaze over. And this guy's a smart guy. He knows how to manage money. He has great banking relationships. But that whole thing just made him glaze over. I said, what if we did this? Okay. What if we took and borrowed $600,000 from your banker? Do you think he'd loan you money and let you pay it back over 10 years? Yes, he loves me. Okay. Do you think we could get 5% interest given the fact that you've got $3 or $4 million in cash parked there? He could probably borrow it for 2. But let's use 5 for the example. He could probably get it for 2%, right, over your CD rate. I said, we're going to borrow this, dump it in the policy, and we're going to amortize it. See, business owners don't like the idea of interest only because what are they thinking? Right? The freight train's coming. I got to pay that off. They don't like interest only. I said, why don't we do this? Let's amortize the debt. Let's completely get you out of that loan in 10 years. Okay? What's it going to cost me? $77,000. Term insurance was $82,000. Okay? Then we've got some catch-up. We do what we call a graded pay. See how we kind of grade into this? The longer you can wait to give the insurance company the money, the higher the performance. Now you're adding risk. Everybody goes, what if it's $750? He's going to be worth a gazillion dollars. Right? Look at the IRR on this. When does it go bad? Anytime you do a skip at a grade like that, you're going to have something go negative on you. 95 is your break even. He's 64, working every day he can. When he's 74, maybe not so much because he's got the really good son that wants to take over the farm. Does it get him his insurance? Yeah. Does it help him understand what he's doing? Yeah. I'm borrowing $600,000. I'll pay it off in 10 years. And then if we still like the insurance, we'll pay $116,000. If we don't, okay, we're done. No collateral.
Well, small likes it because there's money to pay the other.
Exactly. Yeah, it's weird family dynamics also. Questions on cases. I mean, to kind of give you how we look at insurance differently, we do it in a way so people understand. We always try to put, you know, if we can, we always try to put down the sides, you know, our different, the three R's, the risk, the refund, and the return phases. It helps them understand that. A lot of, see how we do this too? We used to put down the chance of living. That you had a 2 or 3 or let's say a 5% chance of living. Well, I could be that one. So now we put you've got a 98.98% of dying. Psychology. Right? At these different ages? So again, what if I live to it? Great. Has your advisor, let me ask you a question. Have you guys on a big case, any of you guys ever done a life expectancy? Hired an actuarial firm to figure out what it is? If they're over 70, I think you should. $300? $300. Okay, if you're going to ask a guy to go put $500,000 a year into a policy, don't you think you ought to know how long he's going to be paying that, give or take? Right? Is that due diligence? You guys in Jerry's meeting talk about fiduciaries? Why not find out how long it's going to be? Who else does that? Who's going to do that? Spend the extra $300 and get an actuarial study to find out how long their client's going to live, to find out how long they're going to be paying and borrowing. It's just different. It's finding your black swan. Anyway, unless you guys have any questions, that's kind of it. If I can help or have any, you want some what-ifs done, or let me know. Is this helpful? Historically, we generally do about 6 to 8. We do more now. We have more staff. We've broadened out a little bit, so we do a lot more than that now. But that's, if you're doing these kind of cases, that's about all you can do. Yeah.
Every turnaround time is about what?
They take forever. These cases take forever. 6 months. Yeah, these kind of cases, they take forever. They really do. Yeah. It's 6. That's just the underwriting. Yeah.
Well, not a pen.
So, by the way, just to give you guys some information too, I told this at the last group. There are a lot of banks now in the area. The major banks get financing out of insurance. The challenge they have is understanding how a surrender value works as a piece of collateral, and how do you advance against that. My experience has been, though, sometimes with the local banks, when they go down their traditional channels, by the time they get the attorneys involved and the fees and everything, the clients just, they don't do it. The banks knock them out. So make sure you go with a bank that knows how to finance insurance. And if it's a big bank, they're going to want a banking relationship. So if you want to go down one of these paths, find out who they're banking with, find out if they do financing. If not, there are specialty or boutique firms that just do financing of insurance. And if you've got a core carrier or a primary carrier, they'll tell you who does it for them.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Let's give him a hand again.